You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow, and we've sort of gotten into some interesting discussion and sort of a theme of basic research, implications of basic research this hour. And up next, I want to talk about another development in basic research that will have applications beyond just the basic research, and that is a new and better embryonic stem cell. In a pair of reports in this week's issue of the journal Nature, two researchers announced the discovery of a new type of mouse embryonic stem cell. We're not talking about a human embryonic stem cell here. We're talking about a research tool, a new mouse embryonic stem cell. The researchers say it's important because it's a closer match to human cells than mouse embryonic stem cells available now. Something of a missing link, if you will, between human cells and mouse cells. And that's important, they say, because it's a better tool for understanding human stem cells and how they might be used in medicine. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to check in on the field of stem cell research, talk about what this and other new research advances mean for the clinical use of these cells and for getting a better understanding of the basic biology of the cells that give rise to all other types of cells. So if you'd like to join in, our number is 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK. Ron MacKay is the lead author of one of the Nature papers. He is a stem cell scientist at the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke at NIH in Bethesda. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the program, Dr. MacKay.
Thank you.
Let's talk about these new stem cells and what they are. They're embryonic stem cells, and they're different than ones you've been using before.
They are. They're from the mouse, as you say, and probably the most interesting way for people to think about this is that we want to know where we come from, where all the cell types of the body are generated. And there's a lot of interest in the type of cell that's called pluripotent, which means that it makes all the cells of the body. And up till now, there's really only two completely clear pluripotent cells. It's the mouse embryonic stem cell, discovered about 20 or 30 years ago, and then less than 10 years ago, scientists reported a human embryonic stem cell, which could also make all the cells of the body. But the two cells were different. The mouse cell and the human cell were really quite different. And what we and a group in Oxford, we collaborated with a group in Oxford, and then independently a group in Cambridge in the UK, what we're all reporting is that actually there's a new kind of mouse cell, which is very similar to the human cell. So now we begin to understand better that there's two different kinds of pluripotent state.
When you say there's a new one, does that mean that's newly discovered, you just missed finding it, or it's really a new cell? I can't imagine it's something new. But
no, it's newly discovered.
Newly discovered.
Yeah, and the reason, it's interesting to ask, why did we miss it?
Yeah.
And the answer is that this cell exists for a very short window of development, and the way we found it was by taking the mouse embryo just at the point where it implants. And that's a very difficult stage to study for most people. But our collaborators were particularly gifted at early mouse embryology. So we isolated these cells. And once you get the hang of it, these cells are easy to grow. But they're different from the classic mouse cell. But they're similar in some crucial ways to the human cells that have been discussed so widely.
Well, let's talk about what the advantages, what crucial differences are there and why we like them so much.
So, one simple way of seeing why they're so interesting is because they're the cell that most immediately turns into the cells that you might be more obviously interested in, like heart cells or brain cells. So these are this new cell type is the cell that immediately does that. Another reason why they're interesting is that the growth conditions, the mechanisms that are controlling their growth, are different from the earlier mouse ES cell state, and they're very similar to the growth conditions that are controlling human cells, and actually they're quite similar in general to growth conditions that are controlling stem cells. So these mechanisms of growth control, for example, may have a lot to teach us about the mechanisms of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Why are they being called the missing link?
Because they represent this sort of step between this earlier cell that was, you know why I think in a way, it's it's sort of like partly it's sort of it just sort of sounds good. But
that does help sometimes.
Sorry?
Yeah, that helps. So.
It helps a lot, sure. But I mean, but partly it's also that it's sort of it's making things clear, right? That it links this sort of mysterious thing, this embryonic stem cell, to all the cells of the body. It's sort of, and it's a sort of way of just simply sort of in a simple way representing the advance in our thinking.
Now, what do these new cells, the newly discovered cells, as you say, which would be more properly described, what do they allow us to do specifically, and what things can we study now that we couldn't study before?
Well, let's go back to this missing link idea as a metaphor. So let's say we're in New York City, and somebody simply tells you you've got to walk to Santa Fe, right? If those are the only instructions that you get, you know, it's going to take quite a while for you to figure out, right, as it did for the early settlers of North America, to figure out how to get to Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. But if they give you a set of instructions, right, they, like Lewis and Clark, they say first go to St. Louis, right? Mm-hmm. Then actually you're much, much more likely to get to Santa Fe. And so that's one of the reasons I think this cell type is of interest, because it's the cell. If you go from here right out across the continent of the body, you're right. You're next to it. You can go from here. Let's keep the St. Louis metaphor working. You can go to Santa Fe. Yeah. You can go to Phoenix. So you're really there. You're almost at the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm. Will this discovery allow us to study diseases in our favorite animal, the laboratory mice?
Yes.
That we had to study in other bigger, more unwieldy animals.
I think what it does is it makes the mouse model much more relevant to the human ES cell, because now we can test out some of our ideas that will be important for the sort of clinical value of early development in a mouse cell, which is easier to manipulate and better understood.
Mm-hmm. Because there's some diseases you have to study in sheep, some diseases you have to study in other animals.
There's always going to be a reason, you know. So, for example, I mean, if you're interested in cardiac disease, you know, the mouse is not perhaps the ultimate model, but there's many basic features of heart development and heart disease that you could study in the mouse. And I think the key thing about this cell type is that it is a state which is stable, and it's a pluripotent cell. So, for example, not only can we use it then as a practical way of going from this cell to more differentiated cells, but we can ask questions that are fundamentally interesting, which is, what does it mean to be pluripotent? And a few days ago, many papers, several of them also in Nature, were talking about the idea that you could reprogram an adult cell to make that pluripotent. Mm-hmm. So essentially in the last 2 weeks, there have been something of the order of 7 or 8 reports, all dealing with the question of pluripotency. What does it mean to have all this potential to differentiate?
Mm-hmm. Were these cells taken from a blastocyst that was allowed to develop a little further along? Is that where they were discovered? And does that make them a little more useful in this differentiation stage?
Yeah. So one of our colleagues, a guy in Oxford called Richard Gardner, who's very famous in this sort of academic world, he had previously done work which showed that you could isolate single cells from a slightly later stage than the blastocyst. So the blastocyst is a stage where the cells that are going to give rise to the mouse are just about 100 in number. And a day later, the blastocyst has developed further, and it's just started to attach to the wall of the uterus. And at this point, there's 700 cells. And 2 days later, there will be several thousand. So these cells are just about to go through an explosion of growth. Mm-hmm. And the stage that we took, and Richard and his colleagues had previously focused on this earlier stage, the stage where the blastocyst is essentially, it's like a kind of a spaceship. It's a ball, and inside it there's a little cluster of cells attached to the surface, and those cells will become the mouse. And then when that attaches to the side of the uterus, that at that point the embryo is going to differentiate and differentiate very fast. And so we went in just at that point and showed that we could grow these cells.
But what made you decide that you were sitting around at the bar having a beer and say, you know, we should wait another day? I mean, well, I'm trying to get inside how a scientist thinks about, you know, let's try this instead of what they
try. Well, I mean, it's a nice story, I think. I mean, so one of the key people in the study is a guy called Paul Tesar, who was a student at Case, and now he's doing a PhD between NIH and Oxford. And so he's the physical link between these labs across the Atlantic. And what we wanted to know is why are the human cells and the mouse cells different? And we thought we should go and look in the mouse to see if we can find a mouse cell that's pluripotent, that's like the human cell. And so it took us a little time, but that's what we're reporting.
Mm-hmm. But what made you think to wait that extra time? Well, you know,
because previously, yeah. So Richard is very well known. He's one of the people who first manipulated early embryos, and sort of this is the sort of founding technology for IVF, for example. And they had shown that the standard way of making an ES cell in the mouse seemed to be limited, that you couldn't do it after a particular day, 4.5. And we thought, well, if we go in and look just a day later, maybe if we're patient enough and do things somewhat differently, we could, in fact, get cells out at that point, and that's why we looked then. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what was interesting was that Paul came back to Bethesda in the summer, and he was learning with us how to grow human cells. And when he went back to Oxford and put these cells into culture, he realized immediately that they looked like human cells, and that they weren't growing well under the standard mouse conditions. And so he switched them to the human conditions. Hmm. And then they grew, and so we spent the last 3 years characterizing them.
Wow, that was a big point.
It's interesting. I mean, it's a nice story, actually.
Yeah, well, we're talking, and it is a nice story. We're talking with Dr. Ron MacKay this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Let's talk a little politics here for a moment. How big an impact does the ban, the continuing American federal funding ban, have on research in your field, in this field?
Well, you know, I mean, this is a sort of, obviously these issues are sensitive, and they're sensitive in many countries, not just in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of reports that you can reprogram a fibroblast sort of in some way sort of open up the idea that pluripotency is a state that can be accessed in many different ways. But I mean, in our case at NIH, I mean, we can grow with federal funds a restricted number of lines, which actually we find very interesting. And this is a way that we can contribute to the basic biology of stem cells. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I mean, as time goes on, presumably a lot of these issues will become less contentious, I would argue, because it's not, I don't think that there's sort of any sort of overwhelmingly impossible task here. In my view, we will need to understand what pluripotency is, because it looks like cells can move there relatively easily, and it's likely to be an extremely important part of our understanding of cancer. Mm-hmm. So if we have a mouse model which helps us, that's very, very good. But I've spent most of the day today talking about human cells and human stem cells in the brain in particular. You know, it's all highly sort of technobabble, but it does move us forward. I mean, there's really only basically three reports of pluripotency, right? There's the original founding report in the mouse in 1980. In the 1990s, there are two or three preliminary reports, and then a report in 1998 of a human ES cell. And then in the last few days, there's our report and there's a report from groups in Boston and Japan that you can generate pluripotency in this completely unexpected way. I mean, that sort of gives you a sense of both this sort of novelty and excitement in the field, but also how, I mean, science moves forward by, you know, fairly sort of long-term plans.
Yeah. Do you think that you might discover a different kind of stem cell in humans also if you waited a certain amount of time?
Well, so one interesting question. We think this is the human cell. That's to say, we think it models it.
Hmm.
But the human ES cell is not generated from post-implantation embryos, obviously. It's generated from embryos which are made in the laboratory by IVF. So then an interesting question arises, well, why would the human cell kind of lock into this state? Why doesn't it look like the earlier mouse cell? And I think the answer to that, actually, is it to do with the way a lot of animals reproduce. So, for example, a pregnant elephant can be pregnant for months without anybody being able to find the embryo because they have a way of arresting the very early embryo. It's a phenomenon called diapause. And many, many animals have this. Mice have it. But humans don't. And so what we think at the moment is that the human cell can't be arrested early. And so it reaches this slightly later step. And that's mm-hmm. the step that we've now isolated in the mouse.
Well,
and that's obvious. I mean, it seems a bit difficult to grasp. But.
Well, it's quite interesting. And I want to thank you for taking time to share it with us.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Good luck to you. Dr. Ron McKay, stem cell scientist at NIH. And that institute that it works at is the Neurological Disorders and Stroke at NIH in Bethesda.